You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
Yesterday, I wrote, just for the fun of it, 10 ideas for reality shows. And some of them are ridiculous, which, by the way, I'm not afraid to share any idea because ideas are abundant. Never feel scarce about your ideas. I never feel like, oh, I can't tell anybody. So I just
want to interrupt the interrupter in chief. But have there been an instance where like you had an idea and then you were like, shoot, that was my idea.
Yeah.
And this person did it and I told them and they're making millions of dollars.
I never care. Like, for instance, now this idea I planned on purpose for it to be bad.
Okay.
But I wanted to go extreme on the bad and the humiliation. But I think people would watch this in a fantasy parallel universe where this could be a show. So it's billionaires defecating.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah.
Like, imagine just turning on the channel and, like, your favorite billionaire is, you're just simply watching them taking a shit. So,
I mean,
we're stretching here, but that's a bad idea.
It's gross.
Yes.
Gross, just for the record.
Bad ideas are okay, but you can't. Cheap ideas are not okay.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just take the easy way out to fill up the 10 ideas. All right, ready?
Yeah, Delta's ready when you are.
So everyone's always asking me, you know, I write down these 10 ideas a day. And I always tell people, write down 10 bad ideas a day. And people say, why not write down 10 good ideas a day? Well, it's impossible to write down 10 good ideas a day. People say ideas are a dime a dozen, but good ideas may be, for all I know, one in a million. But you have to, every day, exercise that idea muscle. And when the idea muscle is like an idea machine, that's when you finally start having good ideas. And people also ask me, do you look back over your old ideas? And I say very rarely, because again, the point is, like, I don't watch a videotape of me at the gym. You just got to go to the gym the next day if you want to exercise. Like, watching a videotape of yesterday's exercise won't make you stronger. By the way, I never go to the gym. But so I just wanted to share an idea list I had recently. And I would say probably almost every idea on here is bad. And there might be some good ideas or some elements of a good idea inside an idea. But then you sort of, you know, it's sort of like inspiration will tell you the next day, oh, let's flesh this idea out a little bit more. That's going to be my idea list for tomorrow.
So you are looking back at those ideas.
Well, no, I might remember.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I might remember like, oh, that one idea intrigued me. I'm going to write down 10 ideas about how to execute that idea. Because that's the other thing. People say ideas are nothing, execution's everything. But you can't, I see people execute on businesses. I'm involved in like, I've seen hundreds of businesses, thousands of businesses. Execution is everything, but execution, you have to have good execution ideas to execute. So I'll give you an example. This is just an example. A friend of mine has a great idea for a business, and it's a type of software that makes videos in special circumstances. I won't describe her idea specifically. And she wants to raise like $100,000 because the software developer would be $50,000, and then the software creates these videos on the fly. And I said to her, that is a horrible execution idea. You're a videographer. The service is a good idea. Why don't you offer your service, do the process manually for the first 10 clients, make some profits, and then you'll learn also exactly what people will need, what things are hard, how you'll be smarter about how you want to automate it. And so, again, my execution idea starts her in a business immediately, gets her profits immediately, helps her learn and get educated about how she wants to automate things, and is better than just spending $50,000 for a software product that people might not want.
No, 1,000%. And as somebody who recently started writing 10 ideas in a day and sending them to you, I'm no greater zealot than the recent convert, but it definitely helps a lot. And it's something that's made me a lot better. And yeah.
And by the way, we haven't even done
it. Like 1 week, and it's like, yeah. And
you've had good ideas. We haven't done any of them, but that's okay. Because, well, the ideas that keep coming to the mind, you know, it's the, like I always say, I never look back at the ideas, right? We just said that. But if an idea comes to mind again next week and then the week after, or if you keep thinking about it over and over, that might be a good idea. And then the next day you write down 10 ideas how to execute that idea.
Yeah. No, I think it's definitely something that's really amazing. And it is a muscle and you do get better at it. I've watched you meet with somebody and like rapid fire come up with 20 different ideas for that person. And I was kind of like, wow, how do you do it? And then I imagine it's like if I worked with somebody out, like eventually you start seeing like,
oh,
hey,
you will see it. Your brain literally gets rewired. I mean, there's scientific evidence of this, that you can rewire, you know, the neuroplasticity, which people thought ended at in your teen years, continues all the way through your adulthood and older age and everything. So you'll see within 3 to 6 months, your brain literally is rewired to become an idea machine. It's no joke. It's like powerful. This is a powerful technique. It connects you to higher levels of your brain. But like, let's say you had an idea, 10 additional ways to monetize the podcast, and you write it and you forget about it the next day, but maybe some idea, keeps sticking around. You know, that's a good idea. That's good. You keep thinking about it. Then the next day it might be let's say what the idea was, okay, one way to monetize the podcast. Well, the podcast will have merchandise. And we'll sell that. And then the next day you might think, okay, 10 pieces of merchandise. Yeah. Here's your idea list. 10 pieces of merchandise we can make. And then the 10 cheapest ways we can make that merchandise. And 10 outlets where we can sell this merchandise. You know, it might be we make a store. It might be we use Amazon sellers. It might be we go to Etsy. It might be we go put it on eBay. It might be we give it out for free to people on my list if they buy like a higher level membership. You start thinking of all these, you know, sublists for the good ideas. It'll just naturally occur as opposed to looking back at the idea list.
And I think just the idea that you're making yourself do it. And I think we've heard this a lot with guests. It's just showing up and doing and habits and practices. You know, that's partly what like Julia Cameron's going to talk about today. Before we even get into your list that we want to talk about. But right, I mean, I've noticed that much. Like there are times where you just don't want to do it, and just doing it, knowing that you have to do it, may make you exert more effort to just say, I just want to get it done.
So today my list was, and by the way, it doesn't have to be business ideas, or it doesn't have to be, like people always say to me, oh, if you don't read the news, you're uninformed, which I think is ridiculous. So my idea list for today was 10 important, valuable reasons why my life is better because I don't read the news. But yesterday I wrote, just for the fun of it, 10 ideas for reality shows. And some of them are ridiculous, but which list do you want to do?
I think we should do the reality show idea. And I think it's very, very helpful. I mean, I'm a subscriber and there's no such thing as a bad idea. Just dumb people. No, no, but I definitely think that, and what I will say about reality shows, and I'm sure some of these are out there. I've heard some of your reality show ideas, but I think as somebody, first of all, who's been meeting with every single big network about one of your ideas, you know, there's going to be some picks in this litter. But what I would say is, though, is I do remember when one of the first reality shows came out, that, you know, the guy who did, I would think, Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire, Mike Darnell, who was the head of reality at Fox, he had all these ideas, and some seemed really crazy and out there. And then when he lost the job, or he was going to lose his job, he had 10 other people who wanted him, and they were really bizarre kind of, you know, ideas for stuff, like, and whether it was, you know, tossing little people, or, yeah, you know, yeah, when animals attack, or, and so maybe that is where the fruit is. You go on a limb. And so I'm excited to hear your ideas. I'm sure they're pretty good.
So there's a couple of things, just let's set the context. So I got back from LA recently, and I had an idea for a reality show, which, by the way, I'm not afraid to share any idea, because ideas are abundant. Never feel scarce about your ideas. I never feel like, oh, I can't tell anybody. I just want to interrupt the interrupter in chief.
But have there been an instance where, like, you had an idea and then you were like, shoot, that was my idea.
Yeah.
And this person did it, and I told them, and they're making millions of dollars. I'm sitting in an Airbnb, you know.
I never care. Like, for instance, first off, let's look at the history of reality TV. I mean, there's what was that show? I think it was like even in the 70s where they looked at this family.
That was
for a year.
7 Up, but it started in the 50s.
It was 7 Up, yeah. But then there was another one.
Oh, yeah. I remember there was James Gandolfini was in the HBO documentary about it. There was like a family.
Yeah. And then one son came out to his family during the show.
Yes.
But then I would say modern reality TV started with, let's say, two shows, The Real World on MTV, which I thought the first couple of seasons were excellent. I'm a big aficionado of
reality. Amazing. Yeah.
And then Taxi Cab Confessions on HBO.
Yeah.
And I did the website for Taxi Cab Confessions. I joined HBO because I loved that show so much. The first episode of Taxi Cab Confessions was just a work of art, and the two brothers who made it are amazing. Oh, and then there was also Real Sex on HBO, which had all these. But I think reality TV sort of falls under a couple of categories. One is sort of the game show category, like Survivor. Let's put everybody in an island and, you know, they have to vote each other off the island. Or let's put The Bachelor, like, you know, the audience or The Bachelor, you know, eliminates one of the contestants each month or week or whatever. And then there's kind of the more social experiment reality TV, like which could be a documentary, like Hoop Dreams. Let's follow these people around. Yeah. It's not that was more documentary, but it was still reality show format, kind of where we're gonna follow these people around in a real, supposedly real situation. Or Married at First Sight is more of a social experiment than a game show. So I don't know if you're familiar with that one. It's
Wife Swap is like that, but Married at First Sight is a show that appeals to you.
Yeah, you practically did. But exactly. But, like, you know, you take The Bachelor, which is like old school now. I think, you know, the idea of like making a game show reality thing. Married at First Sight is more of a social experiment. Two people walk down the aisle and say "I do," and they're legally married. But the first time they see each other ever, they're meeting at the "I do."
Yeah.
And then they're married for a month, and then they decide if they're going to be they're going to stay legally married or they're going to legally divorce. But they're legally married for that month, and it's intense.
And I think I'm not the biggest reality show viewer in the world. I think they really exploded on the scene. I know you're getting a PhD in reality shows, pitching one to all these major networks, but I think that I remember a few things that came to mind with me about that were, people talk about when you do a reality show, like there's four C's that you need. Like you know, comedy, conflict, consequences, and characters. So I'm sure when they're casting for that, they want to make it kind of entertaining. They want to have conflict. They want to have consequences. It's not like, oh, It's not consequences like friends for everybody. At first sight. Yeah.
Yeah. Consequences for everybody. For the people. Doing the show or hosting the show, and for the people, like for instance, with The Bachelor, there's consequences for him. He might get married to one of the bachelorettes, and there's consequences for the bachelorettes. They might get their own show, or they might feel ashamed to be eliminated early, or they might feel pressured by the Bachelor into whatever. I'm just making that up, but you know, back in 1996, 97, I pitched HBO a reality show, two reality shows, and I feel both were eventually done by other people. Not, I'm not saying they stole the idea. I'm just saying things, you know, kind of happen naturally. Something gets in the air and then it happens. My first one was called 3 a.m., which I've written about, which is a reality show about, you know, what are all the sordid things happening at 3 in the morning on a Tuesday night in New York City. You know, Tuesday or Wednesday night is important because not like Saturday night where nobody has to go to work the next day, so everyone's out partying. If you're out at 3 in the morning on Tuesday night, it's usually for a reason that's not good. And so we shot a pilot and bad things happened, and you see what's happening in New York at 3 in the morning. So that was one idea I pitched. Another one I pitched and also shot in order to pitch, I called it Blind Date, where a friend of mine who was very beautiful and very funny, she would put an ad in the newspaper at the time. There was no Craigslist. She would put an ad in the newspaper, hey, we're looking to go on a date. And she'd get tons of responses, and she would pick the restaurant. We would wire up the restaurant completely, and the date wouldn't know we were recording the date.
Yeah.
And crazy things would happen. And now we pitched that, and, you know, we discussed this on the Sheila and Evans podcast, so I won't get into it. But both ideas were later done. There was you know, Dave Attell's Insomnia on Comedy Central. And by the way, I originally pitched Comedy Central on the 3 a.m. idea. And then Blind Date, there was a show called Blind Date somewhere, and I think it was similar. I never actually watched it. But so I've been doing the reality thing for a while.
But I also like this also reinforces what we were talking about earlier, because like, there was an instance where some people get stuck, and they get stuck meaning like, that's my one idea. And you, by coming up with 10 a day, 50 a week, you know, that's 300, what is that, 50 times 30? You know, how many days do you come up with a month then?
Well, yeah, so like, so you come 300 like, a month. So yeah, 3,650 a year. Because I come up with 10 ideas. And again, almost all of them, if not all of them, are bad. But I was even thinking.
But you're like, okay. That's fine. I have other ideas for shows. You know, you know, Blind Date or Insomnia, they come out, or 3 a.m. gets done. That's fine. I have more.
Yeah.
That's a healthier way to live, right? Like to not feel in,
and I've
like
been
a
pitching,
victim.
I've been pitching ideas for TV shows literally for 23 years.
Yeah.
And actually one time, one network offered me a TV show, but for various reasons, I turned it down. This was in 2007. But, and I've had other opportunities, and I just kind of
skipped them. Why did you turn it down?
Well, okay, it was it was one of the business channels there, and I was spending more time on another business channel, and I felt loyal to them, and I was selling a business to a company affiliated with them.
But like the timing was off,
right? And so later on, when I wanted to do it, they had already moved on to other things as well. And so anyway, I've had other you know, it's not like I'm pitching ideas, TV show ideas every day, but this one idea I had, again, it just came out of a 10 ideas list, and I'm like, oh, this one idea is pretty good. You know, this one guy who I admire greatly said to me, come up with an idea that, A, you could describe in like one sentence and everyone gets it, and B, it should be easy to repackage and format for other countries to buy. Because how you make a lot of money now, because there's not as much syndication. So, if you sell the same idea, like if you sell The Bachelor to India, then you make money.
Or
if you sell it to Brazil.
Anything. Yeah.
So, and he described to me the classic example. He said, I don't know if this is true, and I don't remember exactly what he said, but let's just say this is roughly true. He said, this is the most widely seen show on television now, this one reality show. Can you guess what it might be? And it's a reality show.
It's not Survivor, Bachelor, The Voice.
Well, I'll tell you, because it's not Survivor, but House Hunters. So basically,
I would have been here all day. So.
But basically, I think it's on HGTV, right?
Okay.
And somebody is shown, a couple is shown a cheap house, an expensive house, and a house in the middle, and they've got to pick which house they're going to buy.
Wow.
Easy format. packaged in 25 countries.
Wow.
And since it first aired, there's been almost 1,200 episodes shown.
Wow.
So whoever produced this show made maybe $100 million or more. And everybody made a ton of money. And on such a simple format. So I kept pitching like really complicated formats. So finally I pitched a very simple format, which I've written about. And I was just in LA. I pitched it to 9 or 10 different networks. So in 3 days, I visited 10 networks. And it was really hard because there was sort of people working with me on my side of the table, and then the executives of the network on the other side of the table. But I had to be totally on for these high stakes meetings. Yeah. Like they're deciding on, you know, whether they go forward with, you know, a show that could cost them millions at first before it's a success. And so it's really high pressure. But the show is called I Will Make You Millionaire. And I kind of take 6 or 5 contestants and give them highly personalized strategies. And we use kind of coaches, maybe ones that we've had on the podcast before. And I make them millionaires within 6 months, starting from scratch. These are random people. So it's not like Shark Tank where they're already entrepreneurs, or The Prophet where they're already entrepreneurs. These are people totally just straight off the street. And every strategy is really personalized, and they have to follow them exactly or they'll fail. And then they, you know, in the best case, become millionaires. So anyway, I learned a lot in the process of pitching those shows. And I decided to write a list of 10 ideas, specifically bad ideas. I kind of wanted them to be bad, so I wouldn't be tempted to pitch them. But you want to hear some of that?
Yeah, I would love to, of course.
Okay. The first idea, I don't know if we've talked about this one before. It's a quiz show idea, billionaires versus millionaires.
Yes, you did. And I think of Family Feud. I like it.
But on one side is billionaires and on one side is millionaires.
I like it. And I think I actually do like it. But what appealed to you about that?
Well, I think there's a social experiment. Like everything has to have a deeper layer, right?
Right.
So on the one hand, there's a voyeuristic layer. Like, oh, here's all these billionaires. Here's all these millionaires. And then you find a little bit how they become a billionaire, how they become a millionaire. But I think there's a social experiment aspect here, even though it's a game show, where, you know, billionaires, or are they hyper-focused on one area and that's where their knowledge is? Or are they actually really much smarter than millionaires? Or is it random?
Sure.
And you can even do billionaires versus janitors or anything.
Yeah,
but I think billionaires versus millionaires is interesting because it's two categories of what society feels is successful. But the billionaires is literally, mathematically, 1,000 times more successful, if that's your metric, money. And are they 1,000 times kind of better at, this quiz show? And I think the outcome, I don't know what it would be, but I think it'll be interesting to see. Are the billionaires just more hyper-focused on one area and so they don't know anything else at all? And the millionaires are somehow more well-rounded, or vice versa, or we don't know.
But as with the execution of any idea, I think one of the issues would be like, okay, what's the friction you're going to face? And I don't think it's as frictionful, as far as which billionaire is going to come on there? What do they need to come on there for? Like, so people could just hate them and, or they could embarrass themselves. But I will say.
But yeah, there is that friction. Name a billionaire. Like Warren Buffett doesn't know anything about anything. And some random millionaire, he keeps winning every
show. I also don't think it matters to him if he, what I mean? Like they're not, their self-esteem isn't tied on to they know the capital of South Dakota.
Maybe.
Pierre, by the way.
But I think the audience might be rooting. Yeah. Also, who is the audience rooting for? The millionaires or the billionaires?
Oh, that's true too. And obviously, I would imagine you'd have to do a charitable component. And I think that I'm going to say a few things, obviously, because I'm motor mouth. But one thing I would say is, as we've done different things, and the late, great William Goldman famously said, nobody knows anything. And because initially I would say, well, I don't know a lot about reality TV shows because, and I would always encourage us, and whenever we do anything, that idea of successful people seek counsel, not opinions, right? So it's like, but then you're like, who really does know? I mean, I imagine Mark Burnett knows a lot about it.
Maybe because look at all the amazing shows backed by amazing producers that are canceled. And the classic example I have is Vinyl on HBO. So produced by Martin Scorsese and Mick Jagger,
right.
Starring Bobby Cannavale, who's been on every single successful HBO show from The Sopranos to Boardwalk Empire to whatever, and Ray Romano, and James Jagger, Mick Jagger's son, And there was great writers all throughout. I liked the show, but it was canceled. And HBO actually doesn't care as much about ratings, and yet even Martin Scorsese couldn't keep this going. Sure. So who was wrong? Was Martin Scorsese wrong? Was HBO wrong? Am I wrong? Which is probably the most likely, but it's just, you're right. Nobody knows everything, like anything. Like, I pitched this show to 9 or 10 networks. I say or 10 because some of them were combined. Some networks liked it, some didn't. So some people are wrong, some people are right.
And I always remember, like, the media journalist Bill Carter wrote a book called Desperate Networks, and they wrote it, you know.
I like Bill Carter. Did you say late?
I did the Late Show, which was really good.
Oh, I thought you said he was the late Bill
Carter. No. I said the late William Goldman, new Marathon Man. Princess Bride.
Adventures in Screenwriting.
Morons.
By the way, Boys and Girls Together, a novel, which was great, but he never made it into a movie.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, a lot of amazing stuff. Butch Cassidy, Sundance Kid, you know. Kudos to you, William.
But Bill Carter also wrote this great book, The Late Shift, which I did the website for.
That's why I was successful. And a movie with Treat Williams playing the Mike Ovitz, who's a guest of the James Altucher Show podcast. But I think he wrote a very good book on TV, Astute Observer, and he said, like, and when CSI and Survivor came out, those became humongous hits. But even Les Moonves, who had the Midas touch with shows like Friends and ER, knew what he was doing. He thought The Fugitive, you know, the remake of the movie, the, you know, with Tommy Lee Jones, with Tim, that movie, you know, he thought that was going to be the big hit, you know, TV show The Fugitive. And it wasn't. It was CSI and Survivor.
You know, people don't realize
if you
look at the Nielsen ratings each week, it's amazing because no sitcom anymore is in the top 10. Like, that era of the sitcom is over because there's so much reality shows, and because of YouTube and we see so much reality, nobody needs a kind of simulation of reality like Seinfeld or Roseanne or anything like that. Like, I think sitcoms are done. Like, what sitcom?
Well, is a breakout. Roseanne did great. No.
Right.
No,
so
that Roseanne came back. Those horrible.
Yes. So Roseanne came back and did great.
It was fading a little bit.
But it was fading a little bit, but it was already a proven hit from the 80s.
That's true.
So what sitcom have you watched that's a real breakout show in the past 5, 6, 7 years?
Obviously, yeah. I mean, like, the big ones, Modern Family, Office, but they were started a lot earlier.
Yeah, those are before 2000.
Yeah.
I mean, before 2010.
Yeah.
So since 2010, I've seen good sitcoms, but what's been a breakout sitcom?
Right.
Like, I like the sitcom Love on Netflix. I like the sitcom Black Monday that was on Showtime.
Yeah.
There's a couple here and there that I laugh out loud, but they're not breakout hits. They're one season and over.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Entourage was from more than 10 years ago. It was from 2006, so I like that one.
You know, we were 100%. Yeah, I think, like, and you see new ones come out. Two Broke Girls was probably 10, 15 years ago. Like, they repurposed, The Big Bang Theory with Young Sheldon. But now, those are, again, you're right.
But that's before 2010. In fact, that's the longest running multi-camera show out there. But that's why I think reality shows, A, they're cheaper to produce, and B, they're eclipsing the sitcom world.
Yeah.
You know, so, okay, so Billionaires versus Millionaires quiz show.
I think it has some merit.
It's a bad idea probably. Probably could go nowhere. And anyway, it's hard to, it's not like Family Feud where you can just take, you have families all the time applying to be on. Like, how many billionaires really want to be embarrassed on a show?
Okay, and I'm going to get to that real quick because, like, I remember New York Times had a front page story, like, when the reality shows were in their boom, and they were saying, like, one aspect always of reality shows invariably is humiliation. And they were talking about the reality show Cat House on HBO, and they cited an instance where, you know, people had to sign a release saying they were going to go to this brothel in Nevada and pay for sex. And they were like, well, what's more embarrassing than admitting that you have to pay for sex? And they were like, 49 out of 50 of them, like, signed it or something like that.
Yeah, it would amaze me when I was doing my 3 a.m. stuff. So I probably interviewed, 20 people a week for 3 years. So what's that? 1,000 people a year. So 3,000 people I interviewed, probably 99% signed release forms. And let me tell you, at 3 a.m. on a Tuesday night, nobody should be signing a release form. People were cheating on their wives. People were drug dealers. People were prostitutes or their customers. People were taking the bus to Rikers Island. I got everything. Homeless people, homeless kids, and everybody signed a release.
And why do you think it is? Because people want their 15 minutes or...
I honestly don't know. And I would never sign one. But here's my next idea. Now, this idea, I planned on purpose for it to be bad.
Okay.
But it goes along with what you were just saying about humiliation.
Yeah.
But I wanted to go extreme on the bad and the humiliation. But I think people would watch this
in
a fantasy parallel universe where this could be a show. So it's billionaires defecating.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah.
Like, imagine just turning on the channel and, like, your favorite billionaire is you're just simply watching them taking a shit.
I think people would.
So people would watch it. There would be an audience for that.
People watch.
It can't ever get produced.
Right. People watch the Yule log. You know, like, people watch things that you would have no idea. And it's just kind of like, okay.
It's like a fear factor.
Yeah.
But like more humiliating and for billionaires.
And it has the cachet, if you will, it has a cachet of being so out there that people just would watch it out of curiosity.
So
it's probably a crappy idea.
So here's the thing. In order for a reality show to be a good idea, maybe it needs four things. So outside of your four C's, you need, in order for it to, I'm thinking of it from a business perspective now, like pitching and everything.
Yeah.
The network has to like the idea.
Yeah.
You
could choose yourself.
Or you could choose yourself. So, okay. The participants have to like the idea.
Yeah.
So you're not going to be able to fill a single billionaire taking a shit. There has to be an audience for it. I do think there's an audience for it. Somebody will want to watch 24 hours a day.
100%.
Everybody from Kylie Jenner to Warren Buffett.
Yes.
And then maybe the fourth thing is that there's something accomplished maybe by the end, like with Shark Tank, someone gets their business funded. With The Bachelor, someone maybe gets married. But with this one, there actually is no fourth point. So,
I mean,
they get healthier.
No, but couldn't you institute something like that, right? Like to incentivize those people to
analyze the outcome.
Yes, I mean, I remember
purposes.
Like the Sklar Brothers and other people wrote a book on poop and all that about like you know, like every. I mean, it's something that everybody does, and they demystify.
Does billionaire shit have different qualities than that? Might be interesting, actually.
Oh wow!
Like, if you compare billionaire shit to like the average person's shit, is there a difference? Like, are they eating? Then you could tell if they're eating better. Are they less constipated? So more ideas happen. I don't know. We're stretching here, but
that's
a bad idea.
It's gross.
Yes,
gross. Just for the record.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, than you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast, and the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Okay, now this next one I have to explain.
Yeah.
I think this is a good idea. It's called Slaves versus Masters. And so, okay. So here's the idea. So a friend of mine was going through, her family has been in the country for, you know, since the 1600s. She was going through old documents that she found, and she found a will from 1820 where her great-great-great-great-great-whatever-grandfather was, you know, leaving. He actually wasn't leaving his wife. At that time, I guess the law was you could only lend your wife things. Right. Even after you died, it's still considered a loan. Maybe the woman couldn't have possessions. And then he had to direct what happens when the woman dies. But he says, being of sound mind and body, I hereby lend my wife until she dies, in which case it goes to the children. But I hereby lend my wife all our land, cattle, and Negroes. That's what he said, how it's worded in the will. And so I was thinking, who are the descendants of that guy making the will, including my friend, and who are the descendants of the Negroes, quote unquote, and now, you know, the slaves. and now get this big southern plantation and reverse the role. So get right. all those descendants, have them be the masters,
right.
and get the descendants of the guy who made the will, have them be the slaves,
right.
and play that out in some kind of games or contests or whatever for a right. month. And it could either be game show or social experiment. I don't know. I haven't fleshed right. it out further. But there seems to be something interesting there.
Look, it has high stakes. It's definitely a social experiment, like you said. I mean, I remember...
And particularly in this environment where every presidential candidate's talking about reparations, yeah. this is something, there's some kind of revenge thrill here, too.
Yeah, for sure. Again, it's like when you talk about ideas that you think seem too crazy, you know? And,
right. and
you
so,
know,
so
it's
again,
like the crazy today, like maybe that's where you're going on a fruit, on a limb, that's where the fruit is. Like, yeah. you have to, like...
By the way, I'm not saying this is a good idea. The whole point is to exercise the idea
right.
muscle.
Yeah, yeah,
100%. And it's not even fleshed out because you're going to have a lot of people. So you have to weed out
yeah, yeah,
some of the masters and some of the yeah. slaves. And you also have to think of things for them to do. They're not picking cotton. You have to maybe come up with other contests or something that makes it further high stakes. Maybe it is a kind of fear factor sort of yeah. approach. Like the masters come up with a fear factor type things that the slaves have to do.
Now, I mean, the horse is out of the barn right now, but like, are you worried? Like, cause I've seen, you know, teachers who like said, oh, if you were black, you would have been a slave, you know, and they got into a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
So this is not the pinnacle of political correctness, this show, but do you right. think that's a virtue?
Well, actually it might be politically correct. Cause you're saying this is a reparation style
yeah.
show. Like I'm saying, make these yeah. people have revenge. This is the masters now. They're
yeah.
not, you know, their
kind
ancestors.
Like inglorious bastards.
They're being masters over the descendants of the exact people who had enslaved their ancestors. So,
and it has virtues to, like, obviously, it's kind of like we've talked about, like a lesson taught with humor is a lesson learned. So like you're actually, people might not want to watch a documentary on or Amistad about slavery or all of that stuff there. And but they might.
Right. There's a voyeuristic aspect. Like, what do these people think of being descended? Like, there's also,
yeah.
it's not like you're a random white person that then becomes a slave
yeah.
to a black person. You're, again, a descendant of yeah. someone who maybe forcibly beat yeah. or raped one of my ancestors. So,
and to speaking of which, you know, Dr. Henry Louis Gates did the story of the show on PBS, and Ben Affleck, this thing came out, like, it was shown that his ancestors were slave owners, and he asked them to edit it out.
It's funny. The friend of mine who was telling me this story, I said, oh, can I write about this? And her thing was, just don't mention my name because people are.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, why? It's like 200 years ago, obviously,
right.
has nothing to do with you. It's not like,
sure.
like I'm Jewish. It's not like I can say I was in Auschwitz. I'm like a, you know,
yeah, yeah.
so you know, or I'm a white American, but I wasn't here in 1820.
Yeah.
But you know, I still am categorized with white Americans. But anyway, the interesting thing to me about this as an idea on the list
right.
is that it's probably a bad idea for a lot of reasons. A, it has to be fleshed right. out a lot further. B, you know, there's issues with casting something like this. C, as you point out, there's some political correctness issues.
Just some.
I think actually it is totally politically correct, but the question could be raised. But it's the type of idea that I think is acceptable for an idealist, where it's a bad idea, but it's not an easy idea. Like an easy idea for a reality show is, I'm going to follow, 10 people who are training to go into space as an astronaut.
Yeah.
That's like an easy idea that's sort of meaningless. Like, and I could put it on this list of reality shows, but it's not interesting enough to make you interested.
Yes, and I was going to say, like, a lot of this makes me think of, talking about idea muscle, there was that movie Night Shift with Michael Keaton and Henry Winkler, you know.
I vaguely
remember. And it was interesting because, like, Michael Keaton saw himself as an idea man, and he would always say, like, I have an idea. He would have like a million ideas a day. Some were better than others, and some of them were like yours. But one was like, here's an idea. He used to carry around a micro cassette recorder. Here's an idea. Why don't you feed tuna fish mayonnaise? And he would have a lot of ideas like that. And so it exercises Michael Keaton's muscle. He's gone on to do a lot of things. I'm Batman. He did a lot, so good for you, Michael Keaton.
And Michael Keaton, he wasn't... Oh, his best thing was Birdman.
Yeah, for sure.
That movie blew my mind.
He's endured, so you know that'd be for another podcast. Hi, Michael Keaton.
So again, I'm not this was a list I made in a half hour. Yeah. The key is exercising the idea muscle. The key is not, I'm not pitching a single one of these ideas to anybody.
Yeah.
The key is just coming up with ideas that are hard enough to exercise the idea muscle, to make the idea muscle sweat. And there's an interesting thing. There's a social commentary in each one of these things.
But getting back to your bad ideas, I mean...
And by the way, they should all be bad ideas.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's like, it makes me think obviously of the producers, right? If you want to...
Where they tried to come up with a bad idea.
Tell them the plot of that movie. You know?
Well, they tried to come up with a bad idea that they would raise a lot of money for. If I'm thinking now in Madoff style, raise a lot of money for, produce it cheaply, say it's a failure, keep all the money.
And what was their idea?
Springtime for Hitler.
Yeah, and it had Don't Be Stupid. The musical had, great... lyrics don't be stupid, be a smarty, come and join the Nazi party.
Yeah, and then I like how they extend how Mel Brooks extends the idea by putting it on Curb Your Enthusiasm, and then with Larry David, it also becomes a huge hit, ruining his dream of finally retiring the idea. So sometimes you don't know what ideas are good and bad. But again, I'm trying to just come up with ideas that are interesting enough that we could talk about it like this, as opposed to let's follow 10 people trying to get into outer space, big deal. Or 10...
But at the same time, that may be the virtue of a simple idea.
Here's an even worse...
Like Wheel of Fortune is essentially just Hangman on TV, and you're like, wow, it's the most successful game show of all time, or Jeopardy, obviously.
Yeah, so that's taking the reality show idea and just having the game show aspect.
But simple ideas, what I'm saying. Right. Some of your ideas are less simple than others.
Right, like the Billionaires versus Millionaires would be simple to produce.
Yeah.
The whole idea of a reality show is that you want something... with as much drama as a drama, but it's 1/100th the cost to produce. So like Lost, the series premiere of Lost costs over $100 million. The average reality show probably costs about $1 million an episode.
I just have a question too, because remember in the movie Revenge of the Nerds, before they got in Lambda, 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 and they were like, we got rejected from every place we sent a group picture to. We didn't send one to this one group with this one fraternity. Which one? Lambda, Lambda, Lambda. And so then they got accepted into Lambda, Lambda, Lambda. So I'm wondering about when you pitched these, you think like a millionaire idea. You didn't share any of these ideas.
No. Well, I did share one with the agent, and he said, let's focus on the good idea, and then we can do whatever ideas you want after that.
Right, right. And that also, getting back to your point about Scorsese, that does happen too, for some of these people, right? Just because it is the imprimatur of somebody famous or they're doing it. There could be other reasons. They got lazy, or they're just coasting on their laurels. They're not, you know what I mean? I'm not saying that's the case with your favorite show of all time, Vinyl, but I think it does... That can be a possibility.
I won't say it's my favorite show of all time, but there's a scene in it that's my favorite scene of all time, which is when, if you Google Lester chords or Lester, I forgot the chord, A, B, D, something like that. Anyway, it was just a beautiful scene.
Okay.
But next idea, simple format is like House Hunters meets Airbnb. We've talked about this one before. Me or let's say a comedian goes to every city, let's say New York City, stays in the absolute cheapest Airbnb, brings in some comedians, has a party, or does some Airbnb experience, and then stays in the most expensive. So in New York City, for $18 a night, you can stay in a tent in the Bronx.
Wow.
Imagine if I bring some comedians from the club here.
Great idea.
And we just have a party.
I think it's a great idea. I think we need to do it. We've been remiss. And I've talked to you about this one. This one, I usually tell you, don't point the finger, point the thumb. But today I'm pointing the thumb at me. We need to follow up with this. And you shared that
with
Chip Conley.
And he said, let's do it.
Here's the ball. Here's us dropping it.
And New York City, the most expensive place. I mean, there are places that are like palaces that you could not believe. I don't even know why these people are Airbnb them. No. There's places like $10,000 a night. It's crazy. Yeah. So that's $300,000 a month. So... It'd be interesting, again, the same comedians stayed.
Love it.
And it has that House Hunters format. So, okay.
Okay, can I just tell you one thing, though? Because, because I think, we just read Laurie Gottlieb's book, and I thought it was a terrific book. Maybe you should talk to somebody. And she had an interesting observation in there about, envy or, when you think of somebody else doing it, you said before that you had these ideas, and you were like, okay, fine, que sera, sera, somebody else did it. But I've heard Gretchen Rubin or other people talk about it. Like, you feel bad when you're like, damn, like envy is a motivator. You know what I mean? Well, when you're like, why didn't I do this? You know, right? Because this, unlike some of your other ideas, a billionaire defecating one, like this is like, we'd have fun doing it. Or, yeah, you know, and came with us.
But like,
you don't want Jay.
But like, take the 3 a.m. idea, which maybe Comedy Central, like you know, I think Comedy Central's Insomnia with David Tell is much better than my idea. So like, you know, ultimately, and yeah. I'm not running out of ideas, so whatever.
Right. But there's some you're like, damn.
Like somebody listening to this should take this Airbnb idea and do it. But here's the thing. I don't think anyone could do it better than me because I have access to 1,000 right. comedians. And that's what makes this show a little more entertaining.
And so like we have a lot of ideas. And I think another useful thing for our listeners would be, okay, how do you convert ideas?
And by the way, I've probably stayed in more Airbnbs than anyone in the world because I lived in Airbnbs for 4 years.
Sure.
So I know the Airbnb experience. So there's no one more. Like this is a case where let someone do it.
Why aren't you doing it?
Well, because I'm pitching this other idea.
Right.
You gotta pick your.
Yeah, 100%.
But there's no reason why I can't make an idea list with my leftover ideas, my scraps. Okay, then Lloyd.
But is it possible that idea is better than the other idea?
Maybe.
No?
Maybe.
Right, because the same thing I was saying about like different TV shows.
Okay, but the I Will Make You a Millionaire is more in line with something I'm interested in, whereas. I'm not generally interested in being a TV producer. I'm interested in producing that show because I think it'll help people.
And that is what makes you feel fulfilled. Is you've made a lot of people millionaires, and
yeah,
it gives you meaning and purpose in your life.
Yeah, part of the pitch when I was in each meeting was examples from real life where I've done it for other people. So. But okay, so the next idea was inspired by Lori Gottlieb, actually, who we recently had on the podcast.
Oh, it's a good idea.
She's a therapist that writes about, you know, what a therapist really thinks. And the idea is called True Therapy, and it's just reenactments of kind of therapy, not sessions, but therapy encounters from beginning to end. Like someone goes to the therapist, has the presenting problem, we do a reenactment of that, we have Lori Gottlieb's kind of, or someone like her, therapist conversation with the actor, and then the commentary to the video camera, and then the next point, like, and here we are 3 months later, and it's a very true reenactment of a real therapy, you know, several year therapy encounter, you know, and each episode is a new situation. Like someone was abused as a child, now is having problems in relationships. What does the therapist do? And it's based on a real encounter, but an actor plays the role.
See, I like this one, and I think it showed a few things. Like, one, it showed your development of the idea muscle because you heard that and you were able to come, you know, you were able to, because I think you came up with, you know, 200 or 300 ideas a month every month, and you were able to just kind of think, oh, wow. And you thought like that, like, you know, those pathways were formed. But I also think that, I think that that's one thing it showed me, and it showed me that, yeah, I think there's a lot there.
Think about it too. It's a classic thing where it's the show, it's a true crime show, you know, which are often just reenactments. Right. It's true crime meets Lori Gottlieb's Dear Therapist column. That's
or
all this is.
In treatment or,
but
you
In
know,
treatment's like the fictional version.
Right. Or I didn't, Lisa Kudrow have a show kind of like that? Like, I think she had a web series about like people dealing with their therapist or something like that.
But there was drama. There was something.
And I think, but I also think of what the virtue of this show I would like is like, I remember when Laura Schlesinger's, you know, show was very popular. The person calling in saying, hey, I have this problem with my daughter who's.
Right. So that's an advice column though.
Right. But it was like she, when Dr. Laura was giving her advice to everybody, it extended to everybody else.
Right.
Like so I'm listening. Okay. I'm not, you know, somebody who's cutting myself, but I could learn a lot about how to.
So that's the benefit. So think about the benefits of this show. If you're a Netflix, it's easy to produce, right? It costs basically zero to produce, other than what you're paying. You're paying minimal to the actors who are the patients and the talent who's the host, who's the therapist. You're paying a little bit more, and you're paying a producer. But then it's just all takes place in one room. Plus, there's reenactments, which can be done cheaply. Like, oh, you know, you reenact like, oh, I had dinner with my girlfriend. I said this, so you do some simple reenactments. And but the other benefit is, you're right. To the audience, they can look through. Oh, Netflix did 3 seasons of this. There's like 100 episodes. these five episodes deal with situations I'm dealing with, so I can look at an episode and actually use it to help my, the therapist's advice to this patient to help my life.
And like anything else, there's friction to that idea too, right? Like Lori wasn't like, oh my God, I thought, you know, the best idea I ever heard, right? She was more like, if you want to do it, Jane, go ahead.
well, because the other thing is, first off, not every therapy encounter between a doctor and patient ends well. And so there's friction there between the therapist and the patient. And,
you know, showing how the sausage gets made.
Yeah. So, it's, who knows if this is a good idea or a bad idea. Yeah. It's just something that's, we know it's at least worth thinking about because true crime was good. And, you know, Lori's Dear Therapist article successful. And this is just the combination of those two. So if you take two successful ideas, there's plenty of opportunity to put them together. Now, this one, I wanted to take, you remember the show Mythbusters?
Yeah, for sure.
So I wanted to do financial Mythbusters.
Oh, cool.
And so pitch it to like a business channel or something.
Sure.
So like, and just like bust financial myths. Like nobody really knows the answers to these questions. Like, are higher taxes bad or good for the economy? So you could kind of go through.
Oh, I like that.
You know, and, you know, different countries, different situations, different historical periods, different economists. You know, there's a lot of graphics. There's a lot of, you can visit places with high taxes, places with low taxes, talk to rich people, talk to poor people, and, you know, uncover the realities of that myth.
Yeah.
Or another one is, you know, does universal health care work? Again, go to different countries, go to, you know, Michael Moore did this for universal health care.
Sure.
Another one is, does a universal basic income solve problems? Or the truth about Warren Buffett? Like, how did he really make his money? People say he made his money as an investor. It's not 100% of the truth. Does the stock market really go up over time? So since 1700 or 1800, the stock market's gone up. But the reality, and people say, oh, the Dow Jones index goes up 7% a year. But if you actually look at the companies that made up, you know, the, people don't realize the companies change every few years in the Dow Jones. If you actually look at the companies from 1890 that were in the original Dow Jones index, all of them except one have disappeared or gone bankrupt. So it was an interesting
thing. So if there was inclusion of those, then obviously it would have gone down.
And by the way, I once wrote that article for the Wall Street Journal, and out of all the hundreds of articles I wrote for the Wall Street Journal, they were like, you know, we don't feel this one is good enough because the Wall Street Journal owns the Dow Jones Index. So, another one was, how many marriages really end in divorce? That's kind of a financial issue because this...
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody says, oh, it's 50% of marriages end in divorce. I've actually Googled this. You can't really figure out the number. It's really hard to figure out the number of how many, what percentage of marriages end in divorce. I don't know the answer to this question.
Most people like feel like it's 50, over 50%.
Everybody will say 50% if you just ask them.
Yeah.
But I cannot find any conclusive proof of that.
Oh, interesting.
So, so it'd be interesting, all these
Yeah, I think it's
things.
Great. I think we've illustrated the process. Some of your ideas are better than others. But I do think that there is something to be said in investing or in life and anything you've done, you know, like no risk, no reward. I know it's
like,
a cliche.
Like put it this way. If I wrote this as a column, say, and just wrote an article with each of these titles, it will have readers.
Yeah, 100%.
Each one. Like, so that's how I know this is, again, might not be a good TV idea, but it's interesting enough to put on this list. This next idea might have been a, you know, here's where I was getting to the sixth or seventh idea, so it's a little harder. I call this one Trolls, and it's the hidden life of the internet's trolls. So again, I feel like this is a little bit of a cheap or cop-out idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm always wondering, like, all these, like, somebody the other day was, as usual, slandering me on Twitter.
Right.
And every time I would block them, which I should have just ignored, but every time I block them, they would set up another account and start slandering me again. And so finally, I just ignored it, which I should have done from the beginning. But like, who is this guy? And it'd be interesting to like follow him around for a day. And each episode is like a different troll in a wildly different situation.
Yeah, I remember there was a reality show, it's called like Haters or something like that, where like they would have people who hate like whoever, Joey Fatone or something. And then all of a sudden he'd be up there saying, hey, what's up? You know, but that's a little bit different than these professional trolls who are living in their mom's basement. I mean, like,
I interviewed once and I did an article for TechCrunch, a guy who was All he was on a Star Trek message board that was very lively Star Trek message board. And there was one person who he hated. And he was a lawyer. He lost his job. He had to move back in with his parents.
Wow.
And he spent all day long just figuring out how to trash this other guy.
Klingon or English?
In English. But okay. I interviewed him and it was a fun article on TechCrunch, which got popular.
I like that. I think, yeah. I mean,
it's just a cop-out idea because it was an easy idea.
No, I got you. Okay.
So
let's move on.
Moving on. Okay, this one's a little more interesting. It's called Free, and the premise is, can 5 people live in New York City for a month without spending any money?
Oh, wow. I like that.
And then it doesn't matter how they do it. They just have to show up at the end of the month, and they can't have spent a single dollar, and then they win a prize. And so there's a game show component, but it's also a social experiment.
Yeah.
So I like these things that are both game shows and social experiments.
Let's ask Mark Malkoff to do that. He does a lot of
He would do something like that. Yeah. But if you think about it, you could do it by being homeless, right? Yeah. And then and begging for food or going to the back of the restaurants and whatever. But maybe you make it in February, so it's a little harder.
I think I saw, not that I have any white hot desire to watch it, but I saw a lot of commercials for a show produced by LeBron James, which is you have to run a mile and have somebody chase you. You know, there are a lot of these kind of shows.
But I think that one is good because basically you can set any kind of physical endeavor and someone is a predator.
Yeah, yeah.
But this one is actually harder in that what are really the parameters of this? Because maybe it's easy to just be homeless and live in a homeless shelter for a month and then be done with it. Or maybe it's not. I don't know.
And relying on the kindness of strangers and there's a
lot. Yeah, also there's another thing. There's lots of things that are free that people don't realize. Yeah. So, for instance, I can go probably to there's probably stores out there where they have last year's sneakers they never sold, and I can get sneakers for free. I don't know. There's because I'm working on something that's called the Big Book of Free, and it made me think of this. Can somebody get by for a month, not being homeless, not staying on a friend's couch, but still are there hotels where they have to give a certain number of rooms away for free every night if they haven't sold them. So I'm just trying to think. They'd have to research. Maybe there's free things in each city.
Yeah, 100%.
So then you could do it city by city. So anyway, next one, because our next guest is coming in a few minutes. This one is not so much a reality show, but there's every channel has late night TV shows with a certain format, a monologue, sketches, whatever. So none of the business channels does a late night show about Wall Street and with the late night format. Okay. So imagine the late night format. So a late night format is monologue from the host, which is funny,
right.
Sketches, right? And there are sketch writers and the host does them. Guests, usually celebrity guests promoting something Will Smith will go on Jimmy Fallon to promote a movie. And then some kind of news stuff about the economy. So it's basically like The Daily Show, but just about Wall Street.
I like it. I really do.
That's an interesting
format. I definitely like it. I do.
I like this one. But it may or may not be a good idea. It's called Candidate. And this is based on, I feel like there was a cartoon or maybe a show from the 70s. It was a sitcom, I think. A team of internet marketers pick a random guy and get him elected to political office.
Oh, wow.
And the political office has to be mayor or above.
Yeah, wow. I kind of remember Eddie Murphy had a movie where he ran for Congress and he got in and he was, I do like that.
Or Chris Rock, I think it was, or Warren Beatty.
No,
somebody.
Chris Rock was a remake of Here Comes Mr. Jordan and Heaven Can Wait, where he was reincarnated as a white middle-aged person.
The reason I came up with this idea is I remember I was having, this is in 2012, I was having dinner with some in Austin. I didn't know anything about internet marketing. I was having dinner with a guy in Austin who had done all these amazing things with internet marketing, and he was considered the best internet marketer in the world. And I didn't know what that meant. And he said, he just pointed just randomly. We were sitting in this restaurant and he pointed to the bar of the restaurant. He said, I could take that guy and make him a congressman. And so then a few years later, when I was kind of just, I did a mini run for Congress, I called him and I said, what would you do?
Wow.
And so he thought about it for a few days and he came back and he pitched me all these weird internet marketing style ideas to get noticed. So for instance, one thing he said is, Every primary for a local election is won by who the senior citizens vote for. Because the senior citizens are the easiest to get out the vote. You just send the van around to all the old age homes, pick them up, take them home. And so you have to kind of, he had all these things of like which specific things, which shortcuts you could take to focus on that would cost you the least. And he was also using all these things like reciprocity. Like, can you give every single senior citizen in your district a dollar bill? Because then it'll automatically trigger for some of them
100%.
Reciprocity.
Yeah.
And he had all these like strange Amazing. Ideas. Yeah. But I was thinking, oh, what if you made a show out of that for every election? And and you know, every episode is a different internet marketing idea or internet marketing expert giving advice to this candidate.
I like it. I mean, I do. I think it instructs you on the political system. You learn about things. I mean, there's the feature. It's an entertaining, interesting social experiment, and then the benefits of it.
Yeah, and then also you learn about internet marketing, which is, by the way, there's thousands of courses how to be a better internet marketer, and every business now is using internet marketing. You learn about internet marketing. You learn about the political system. You learn specifically how they combine, like how did Donald Trump and Barack Obama make massive uses of the social media to drive out votes? You know, like Donald Trump, not only was he marketing to get votes, but he was also marketing to suppress votes for Hillary.
100%.
We learned that from Phil Stutz, who came on the podcast. And and then the guy might get elected, or the woman might get elected.
Yeah.
You know, and then that's crazy. And then the show's a success.
Well, it's also, there was that movie with Robert Redford called The Candidate.
Yeah.
And famously at the end, he was like, he worked all this time to get elected. Then he was like, what do I do now?
I think what you saw in the very last scene of that movie, which was a brilliant movie, was that he was always saying he was going to be different from his dad, who was previously like a senator. And then as soon as he got elected, suddenly you could see, oh, he's business as usual. You know, he couldn't get away from the corruption, that the internal spiritual corruption that happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could see if this happens to the candidates.
Yeah, it's great. These are good ideas. They are. I mean, they're good ideas because you've had a lot of great ideas and you've had the practice. And obviously, you know, they all can't be gems, and these certainly all aren't. But it also, you know, I mean, again, it's like
I don't think any of them are as good as the one I actually did go to LA to pitch.
Yeah, 100%.
Which was like a real professional idea. These are all just
transformational, and I think it's I like it. Yeah.
But so this was an example of an idealist. Some bad ideas, some maybe good ideas, but that need to be fleshed out. But nothing, no idea was, except for maybe the trolls one, I feel, no idea was an easy cop-out. Like, I think the challenge is, particularly on the later ideas in any idealist, is that, oh, like, here's a bad reality show idea. Let's follow 10 podcasters around for a year.
Yeah.
Like, that's an easy reality show idea. That's definitely a bad idea, but it's okay. But we know, but James says bad ideas are okay. Bad ideas are okay, but you can't, cheap ideas are not okay.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just take the easy way out to fill up the 10 ideas.
Well, it's like having an essay. It has to be 200 words. I'm putting 57 very, you know, very, 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 very. You know.
Right. Or what I used to do is like, a college essay is like a triple space instead of double space, the essay. So it's 50% bigger. Although now I still do that. I'll single space and tiny font and write a page and then expand it out to see how much I wrote, which is always fun. Okay. But anyway, that's
thank you very
a typical
much, James. These are great.
10 reality show ideas, the list for yesterday. That was my list yesterday. And if anybody wants to steal any of these ideas, knock yourselves out.
Thank you. I'm going to steal some.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.